All right, we're back with Basketball Insider Mike Grenier this week, despite the fact that we're taking off from North Shore Sports Night. And Mike, happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you, and how are you?
Well, I'd say I return the compliment or the well wishes to yourself and everybody who listens to us out there.
Absolutely.
It's a nice holiday season so far.
Yes, sir. Agreed. And let's keep it that way, safe and healthy and so on. Mike, we've talked so many times about the ups and downs of the Celtics over the years. They went through a recent little dip that, I don't know, I guess publicly the people who get on the sports talk shows in Boston and get in the newspapers started to really, once again, rant and rave about things that I think they don't know anything about. You sort of took an even keel here, saying, okay, everybody goes through this kind of thing.
Right.
And the Celtics rebounded, I think, in the most incredible way. They won a game before Milwaukee, but that Milwaukee game about a week ago was fabulous.
Right. Yeah. Christmas Day, they kind of reasserted their superiority in the Eastern Conference, and then they won subsequently. They played the Houston Rockets the other night, who were a bad team, and the Celtics got off to a bad start, but they ended up winning by 18, 20 points. So they've sort of reestablished their preeminence in the Eastern Conference, and even though they won just 5 of their last 10 games, but that's because, you know, they did have that dip against the Orlando Magic. So it's a long season, as we know, 82 games. They've played 35, and they're 25-10, so they still have the best record in the NBA. So you can't complain about that, because as we know, a year ago on Christmas Day, they were like a game or two below 500, lost to the Knicks on a half-court shot, and everyone was concerned about what the direction this team was going in, up or down, and they ended up obviously having a tremendous second half of the season and made the NBA Finals. So this year, when you look at it from a standpoint of compared to last year, with essentially the same core players, they're much better off and playing much better than they did a year ago. And even though they've had a recent dip, obviously they're still the team to beat, not just in the Eastern Conference, but throughout the NBA. Well, however, Rick, we should point out that as much as we don't like to talk about the Brooklyn Nets, because they're so disjointed and so dysfunctional most of the time, they have, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, they have been the best basketball team record-wise in the NBA. And you wonder how they're doing it because, you know, they still have Kyrie Irving and, of course, Kevin Durant has been tremendous. He's been great his entire career. And, you know, Ben Simmons has been in and out of the lineup, and he's a horrible free-throw shooter, and he makes a lot of mistakes. And you never know whether he's going to be available because he's had various injuries and psychological problems. But you have to give him credit. They've won their last 10 games, and it's the Nets and not the Bucks right now who are breathing down the Celtics' necks in the Eastern Conference.
I want to get back to that in a second, but at first I want to say, you know, to me, a season is defined sometimes by big games or big moments. And, you know, the first big moment for the Celtics this year really was Golden State, and they failed. They got whooped.
Yep,
and then
exactly.
The next big moment was Milwaukee, and I think this is the second time that they've beaten Milwaukee, am I right?
Yes, I believe so, yep.
All right, well, this time, what was impressive, Mike, about this win was that it came during the middle of that little downstretch where they lost 3 or 4 games there three or four losses out of about 5 games. So it came during that period. And what was impressive about that game was, again, Boston media is ruthless. And they were all over Jaylen Brown in particular, but they were all over the coach. And to me, the Celtics played that game. It started with defense. They were just so focused, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then they did the things they were supposed to do. They stuck with it, and they did it throughout the game. And, you know, against Giannis and that whole crew there, I just think that was a very satisfying win. And as you say, they came back the next night or a couple of nights later and beat Brooklyn. And they didn't play well against Brooklyn, but they still won. But I think that in the course of a long season, that shows a little bit of character. And I'm going to say this about Brooklyn. Okay, they're in a good stretch right now.
Yes,
but let's see how long that lasts.
Right, exactly. That was going to be my point. I feel the same way as you do. We kind of sense that's the kind of team that can implode at any time. That's the way I look at them. And during this 10-game winning streak, which has been impressive, obviously, and not just 10 wins in a row, but they've also won like something like 13 or 14 somewhere, and you know, they've had a phenomenal streak for the last 3 weeks or so. The thing is about them is you don't know whether you can trust them to be a great team in the long run. In other words, will they be there in April and May? I'm not so sure. As well as they're playing right now, we know that it doesn't take much to set them off in terms of somebody leaving the team for a couple weeks or 3 weeks. And overall, Rick, I don't believe the Brooklyn roster is as well constructed as the Celtics roster, or for that matter, the Milwaukee Bucks roster. Mm-hmm. There are more holes in their roster than there are in Boston's and Milwaukee's rosters. They just don't have as much depth. The frontline talent is very good, but you don't know if it's going to last for 82 games plus the playoffs. I still see the Bucks as the main mm-hmm. challenges.
Yes.
The Celtics in the long run in the Eastern Conference, although the Nets obviously are capable with that experience they have, because, you know, Durant's been around for a long time. Kyrie's been around for a long time. Joe Harris, a good shooter, has been around for a while. They're good, but they're just, I don't think, as well-rounded as the Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks. So, but there's certainly, it could be a troublesome team in the playoffs, and, you know, if you look at it coming into January 1st here of the 2023, they look like a threat. But mm-hmm. we don't know whether that's going to be the case 3 months from now. Whereas I believe the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks will still be way up there in the standings in March.
I want to go back to the Bucks because historically the Yankees have had the number over the Red Sox. The Canadians had the number over the Bruins, and so on and so on. And the Patriots used to have the number over Buffalo. Right now, with last year's playoffs and this year's regulation games against Milwaukee, does it make any difference mentally, Mike, the way the Celtics have handled Milwaukee for the Bucks? Do they get a little bit of mystique, panicked here maybe?
Yeah, no, I do think that in terms of confidence and feeling good about their chances against the Bucks, yes, because they won a seven-game series last year and they played well against them this year, I believe they have an advantage in confidence and knowing that they can beat the Bucks. However, the one caveat, if you will, in this whole deal, is that Chris Middleton has not been healthy.
Mm-hmm.
He's their second-best player, the Milwaukee Bucks' second-best player, and he missed the playoffs last year. He missed the first 20-25 games this year, came back, and has been in street clothes the last two or three games because he's re-injured. So we don't know what the full Bucks complementary players will do. If Chris Middleton is not there, it definitely takes away from their overall power, if that's the word. But I still, even with Chris Middleton there, though, the Celtics have beaten the Bucks enough now where they'll feel mm-hmm. confident in playing them, even with Middleton there. I'm just saying that Middleton's a terrific
right.
player.
Right.
He's the second-best player, and the Bucks have a very deep team. So when Middleton's available, obviously it adds to that depth because someone else now goes to the bench, whether it be Pat Connaughton or Bobby Portis. Both of those guys, you know, Bobby Portis has had a spectacular season, probably the sixth man of the year right now. He's averaging like 11, 12 rebounds a game and 14, 15 points a game. He's been tremendous for the Bucks. So I'm concerned about the Bucks. I think, you know, they won it 2 years ago overall. You know, Celtics beat them last year, but the Bucks are still in the upper crust, as we know. But I do believe, like you, that the Celtics can beat them in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
especially. That's why I think best record will be important, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
To have the home court
in
the seven-game series will be crucial this coming as the season progresses here for the Celtics.
All right, before I switch to a couple of other topics I want to ask you about, we have to. I have to get your opinion on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, because many, many times when you and I and Tim talk, we talk about all the supporting cast because everybody knows how good those two guys are. But it seems to me that those two guys have really answered the bell recently.
Oh, yeah. And I guess we promised, right, that we would not talk about MVP candidates until the midpoint of the season, which is 41 games.
Okay.
However, if we could just give a hint of what might happen, I think obviously Jason Tatum would be in the MVP conversation. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Giannis would be there. Jokic, who I could talk about all day.
Well, we're going to go there next.
Yeah. He's just a great, great player. You know, he would have to be included as well. And the people who love individual players will nominate Luka Doncic, who had the most ridiculous game of the entire NBA season
yep.
the other night, Rick. 60 points,
yep.
21 rebounds, 10 assists, the first ever such triple-double. So a lot of people put him in high regard. But really, the Dallas Mavericks are basically a 500 team, and they're not really, I don't think, a threat to go into the finals. So, you know, you'd have to put Tatum in there. You'd have to put Giannis in there. You'd have to put Jokic in there. Those are the primary three. If Brooklyn keeps playing well, Kevin Durant would have to be in that mix. So, you know, there's a lot of great individual players who are certainly propelling their team. And Jason Tatum, as great as Jaylen Brown has been playing, and he has been playing great. He's right behind. He's averaging 27 a game, and Tatum's averaging 31. As great as Jaylen Brown is playing, I think there's still some separation, which is more credit to Tatum. He's taken that next step up in the ladder. He's just in a stratosphere this year as far as getting to the foul line, taking it to the basket, making three-pointers, playing better defense, I think, than he's ever played in his entire career. He's more committed to defense than I've ever seen him. And I believe he's sixth overall in minutes played in the NBA. Well, you don't like to see that, but he's still young enough where he can play a lot of minutes. And I just think, as an all-around player, he's improved. No one just talks strictly about his offense anymore, or his three-point shooting, or his 31 points per game. You also have to include his getting to the foul line, his rebounding, his defense. I think he's become a more complete player, and I think that's the difference right now between he and Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown, no, that's not a put down on Jaylen Brown. It's just the fact that Tatum has improved that much. And Jaylen Brown, I mean, we've seen him have a 23-point quarter the other night. We've seen him get, the two of them combined, by the way, Tatum and Brown, have the best two-man scoring averages in the entire league. In other words, there's no two better players on a team, scoring-wise, than Tatum and Brown. So that tells you that both of them are playing at an extremely high level.
And I think the thing you mentioned that really catches my eye is it's when Tatum comes back on defense and he hustles, he might miss a shot, he might have thought he was fouled, but he still gets back now on defense, which he wasn't doing many times before. And he's disruptive on defense, and then that ignites the offense. And I agree with you. I'm amazed by his all-around play. And it's just it's great to see. And I think, do you agree, Mike, that maybe he is maturing on the court in terms of dealing with officials?
Oh, yeah. There's no question. I mean, he still throws up his arms and all that, but it's sort of in the minority now in terms of he knows he has to get back on defense. I believe he feels that he's the true team leader. In other words, like, he has a phenomenal respect. He and Jaylen Brown have to have a special relationship because both of them are so important to the Celtics currently and over the next few years, okay? So I think there's a mutual respect there. But I think Jason Tatum feels he's taking on more of a leadership role than ever before. And I think Jaylen Brown's fine with that.
Not only that, but I think Marcus Smart is fine with that. Did you read his comments?
Absolutely.
He said, we're going to let them do what they do. You know, let them go. And if they need help, we'll help them.
That's right. And, of course, Marcus Smart is the defensive bellwether. And he is the leader on the floor in many ways. The fact that when the Celtics are down 12, 14, he's the guy that's sort of trying to rally them and trying to taking even more chances on defense, laying his body on the line. We both know, or we all know, what Marcus Smart can do defensively to ignite a team. It's hard to ignite a team defensively when everyone looks at scoring as the biggest thing in basketball, but he actually can ignite a team defensively by making a couple of great plays. Guys get fired up, teammates get fired up. We know the fans of the Garden, who I think are the most knowledgeable. I've been around to many NBA arenas over the years. I believe the Celtics fans are the most knowledgeable of any fans in the NBA.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know, you can make maybe a case for Golden State. I haven't been out there in a while, but I just know that when you go to a Celtics game, they pick up on the little things.
What about the Knicks? The Knicks, to me, their fans have always been knowledgeable.
Well, yeah, the Knicks are knowledgeable fans. However, there are a lot of celebrity fans that go to the Knicks games.
Okay.
And they don't make up the majority of the crowd. But, yeah, the Knicks fans, for the most part, I find them to be loyal people. They fill the building no matter how bad that team is. Now they're a pretty good team. They have Jalen Brunson playing and Tom Thibodeau as the coach. You know, they're a few games over 500, and they'll make the playoffs and all that. But they don't have a great roster. They could give teams some trouble. But Knicks fans, on the whole, they're vociferous, they're loud, they're observant, and they're good fans. They're knowledgeable fans.
I love that. We're going to have to talk about the Power Five of fans at some point. that's very cool to mention that. Yeah, I agree with you about the Celtics. To me, the epitome of what sports is all about in terms of fandom was, I don't know, 67 or 68 when Philadelphia was beating Boston in the seventh game, and all the fans started yelling, "At the Garden, beat L.A." And
oh, yeah.
To me, that I'll never, ever forget that. And, man, that's the epitome of understanding sports and supporting your own team.
Yeah, the Garden fans really, they recognize opposing teams' great play. I thought that was the case when Magic Johnson would play against them in the Lakers in the 80s.
Yep.
You know, Magic Johnson and Michael, fans even respected Michael Cooper and the way he played defense against Larry Bird, because Larry Bird would openly compliment Michael Cooper for his defense. So, you know, fans picked up on that. They respected the Lakers greatly, including Pat Riley, who was the head coach at the time. So, yeah, they've always been knowledgeable fans and certainly support the Celtics, but they recognize that opposing players are great players. So,
okay. I didn't ask you to prepare for this. Do you have a Power Five?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay, I think I know who's back at number one, but if you got it, go for it.
I think the Celtics, we'll start with the number let's go with the number five team here.
Okay.
I think we have to go with, I still think, the Denver Nuggets have to move up somewhere around two or three.
Mm-hmm.
I have to drop the Bucks to number five because they've
beaten
four of their last ten. And even though they've dropped into third place now behind the Nets in the Eastern Conference. So I believe they're number five.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I believe you have to put the Denver Nuggets probably at the number four spot. They've been playing tremendous overall. I think you have to go with, we'd have to go, the Nets might be number, I don't know, the Nets might be number two at this point. I'm a little flummoxed here as to put the number three spot.
Okay.
But I believe the Nets might be the number two.
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtics have to be back at the number one spot.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take a quick peek here because I had them lined up. I wasn't expecting a power five here.
No, I know. I swung it on you.
So here we go. All right. We're going to have to go with the Bucks at number five.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
We said we're going to have to go. Oh, the New Orleans Pelicans have to be in there. Okay.
Okay.
They've been playing well. So we'll put them at the number three.
Okay.
I think we have to put, the fast rising Brooklyn Nets at the number two spot.
Yep.
And the Celtics at number one.
They're back one.
All right.
When you mention New Orleans, I haven't watched any of the other games. What's the status of Zion? Is he going to make it through the season?
Well, only Zion knows that. I think he's been healthy so far. He's put up some really healthy numbers. I mean, he's a terror as an offensive player because even though he's a big body, he's got extraordinary quickness. And he'll get you 25-30 any night. I did notice a couple nights ago, even though he scored 26-27, he only had three rebounds.
Ooh.
To me, when you have a sculpted body, I mean, a guy who's as big as he is and who can move as quickly as Zion Williamson can, you got to come up with more rebounds than that. Most games, he's double figures or close to double figures in rebounds. However, I don't know if he took a night off from rebounding the other night, but he scored like 27 or something like that, and he only had three rebounds. And to me, I'm thinking, how come? Did he not go after the rebound? So that's why I have little question marks about
mm-hmm.
him all the time.
Yep.
And, of course, he has an injury history.
Mm-hmm.
But if he stays healthy, that team is going to be, you know, a dangerous team in the Western Conference playoff. Now, I always thought Phoenix Suns would be in the mix, but right now, Devin Booker, their best player, a guy who once got 70 against the Celtics at the Garden, he's out for like a month with a groin injury, and that takes them down a couple of pegs in the standings in the Western Conference. So, but of course, the Celtics worry about first about the Eastern Conference, and obviously Milwaukee is the prime threat. And right now, you'd have to consider the Brooklyn Nets a threat. And I still think the Cleveland Cavaliers, Rick, are playing very good basketball. They've been hanging around for 34, 35 games as a good team, and they remain a good team after 34, 35.
What about the 76ers? They seem to be hot and cold right now.
You're right. But you know what? For the most part, they play pretty well. I think they've won like 7 of the last 10 or something like that. And Joel Embiid, who, of course, who would also be, Rick, I think, an MVP candidate because his team, Philly, I think, is better than the Dallas Maverick, which has Doncic.
Mm-hmm.
But Embiid the other night had 48 points and like 14 or 15 rebounds. He is a nightmare to cover because, as we know, he's a very strong inside player, but he can also hit the three and hit the mid-range jumper. I love all three phases of his game. The fact that he's a power player inside, the fact that he can hit the three, and also he has a really outstanding foul line jumper, and he rebounds, and he's a terrifying player on a given night. So I think, sure enough, yeah, I believe Philly, on if they put together a good 6 or 7 game series, they can knock off a team that's higher in the standings. I really believe they're fully capable of that. It all depends on James Harden, I think, because obviously he's the point guard and he's an older player. He's might be considered over the hill, but he's still, on a given night, can give you 12, 13 assists and 20 points, and that makes them a dangerous team because they have other complementary parts like Tobias Harris and a couple other players, Tyrese Maxey, who are very good players and have some very good young players. So, yeah, they're kind of a dangerous team when you look ahead to the beginning of the playoffs. You know?
Well, they also have Doc Rivers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's definitely in the upper echelon of NBA coaches.
All right, I want to ask you, I mentioned Williams because I'm looking at Robert Williams. This is the last topic I have.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to mention that we won't have North Shore Sports Night again next Monday night, but, Mike, we got to get together and do the Basketball Insider next week no matter what.
Sure.
But,
you mentioned Robert Williams, yes.
Yeah, tell me about Robert Williams and your opinion.
You know what? Deep down I'm thinking, with all that off time he had, of course he was recovering me, couldn't he have developed a foul line jumper? he's not there yet.
Well, nope.
His quickness around the glass, the way he gets to the boards, the way he blocks shots, his quickness around the basket is definitely extraordinary. Okay, and he still gets three or four or five lob passes a game that he dunks. And also, too, he'll give you anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 blocks almost on any night. He's capable of giving you anywhere from 2 to 5 block shots. And he's defensively very sound, fundamentally defensively. So therefore, his addition back from injury has been a major plus for the Celtics. And we just hope that he can sustain not just that ability to play, but also his health, because that has been the problem throughout the early part of his career here.
In terms of rotation, Mike, and I promise this is my last question, how do you think Joe Mazzulla is doing now that Williams is available in terms of matching guys up with one another on the court?
Well, I think Joe Mazzulla, I think, was probably being questioned way too much when they had a 3-game losing streak, against the Orlando Magic and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've recovered. I think his rotations have been good. I question, again, Ime Udoka, the same thing last year, didn't use Peyton Pritchard until later in the season. And there's been talk about Peyton Pritchard being moved at the trade deadline. I don't understand why. I still think on nights when Sam Hauser is not shooting well, okay, and Hauser is strictly a 3-point shooter, and he's a taller guy, 6'8", 6'9". When he's not shooting well, why not put in Peyton Pritchard? Because he is a similar 3-point shooter. By that I mean he's an effective 3-point shooter. So if Hauser's not doing it, why not give Pritchard a few minutes as a shooter? Obviously, it's based on height many times because Pritchard can be a defensive liability because he's a much smaller guy. However, as a shooter, I think he's definitely the equal of Sam Hauser, and I think he needs more play. That's the one quibble I would have with Mazzulla. Most people would consider it a minor quibble, but in the long run, Peyton Pritchard can play a role. Right now, he's not playing a role. He's playing a lot of bench.
Yeah.
He's on the bench a lot, and I don't understand that personally.
No, that's an interesting point, and I wondered about that myself because he was such a vital cog down the stretch last year. And now they're putting Hauser in there and Cornett and these other guys. And
Malcolm Brogdon, of course, Rick, we both like him.
I love Malcolm Brogdon.
He's been as effective as anybody in the last few games, even with the Celtics when they were in that downslide. He's still averaging like 13.5 points a game. I still love the fact that as soon as he gets on the floor, he takes it to the basket. And he can hit the outside shot, but he's looking to feed guys off his penetration. And I think a lot of times they need that.
Not only that, but he's also a two-way player, and he's steady, he's reliable, and I'm going to say this, probably jinxing him, but he doesn't turn the ball over.
No, you're right. For a guy who handles it as much as he does, and he goes inside, he doesn't turn the ball over much, whereas Jaylen Brown still turns it over a little too much. Jaylen Brown tries to do sometimes a little too much when he goes inside.
Yep.
When he finishes a play inside, it's often spectacular.
Yep.
But then he gets into a little rut where he tries to do it maybe a little too often, and he gets some turnovers. And I also, Rick, if we're talking minor quibbles, Jaylen Brown can also improve his free throw shooting.
Yeah. All right? Was he the one who missed a three in a row there the other night?
He missed three in a row at the end of a half.
At the half.
It was a great play.
Yep.
And he got fouled at the end of a half.
Yep.
It was a smart move. And he goes to the line to give the Celtics three more points. Right. And he misses all three shots.
Yes. Yes.
He's at 79%. And when you look at his pure athletic skill, I know Jason Tatum's shooting around 86% three from the foul line. So when you look at Jaylen Brown, who has similar athletic skill, and you say, why is he shooting 79%? And you think he should be shooting 85 or 88% and all that stuff. But again, that's minor only because Jaylen Brown gets you 27 points a game anyway.
Isn't it great to be able to pick nits at this point of the season?
Yes, absolutely. That tells you we're nitpicking because the Celtics are 25-10, and we're looking for little things that where they can improve. So, you know, at this point going into January 1st, maybe we can leave it this way. Maybe we can get Peyton Pritchard back some more playing time. Maybe we can get better free throw shooting from Jaylen Brown. Some better three-point shooting from Sam Hauser, who's been off lately. Other than that, there isn't much to complain about.
I love your expertise, Mike. I love your descriptions and your enthusiasm for all of this. And it's so much fun to talk with you and learn from you. I really appreciate it. Let's do this again sometime next week. But in the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful New Year's weekend.
Yeah, that's great. And, of course, now the Celtics go on the road for the next three or four games. So after tonight against the Clippers, they're on the road for like four games. So let's see how they are doing when they come back from the road.
That's Mike Grenier, sports journalist and sports historian with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.